Thanks for calling. Thank all of you for coming. It's always a pleasure to do these. I was looking back, and I think that this is probably about the sixth or seventh of these talks that I've done. And so I had a little problem because I got to have to try to think of something that I hadn't talked about before. And so what I wanted to do tonight was talk about a new passion of mine. It's sort of combining an old passion, namely my interest in the web, with this slightly newer passion that I have with the subject of open source, and to try to bring these things together in some kind of meaningful way and share my current thoughts with you, and I hope that I'll get some feedback from you about this. Now, I am going to make the presumption, and please forgive me if this is erroneous, that you, like many other groups that I've spoken to, you know, maybe have a few questions about what open source is or what it really means. Okay? So I want to go through that. And so once again, if this is repetitive to some of you, please forgive me and bear with me in that time, because hopefully then I can tie.
This is forward, this is backward, and this is distance.
Okay. So I can tie all these things together. Okay, I would like to make, I enjoy making these sessions as interactive as possible. So please feel free to ask me a question if something's not totally clear. We don't have to wait until the end to address all of the questions. All right. So with that, as I said, the topic for this is open source software, a collaboration platform for web applications. Sounds pretty sophisticated. At least I'll try to explain in some way what I mean by those sentences. So at the very beginning, I want to, as I said, address the issue of open source, or at least I can say open source in the way that I understand it, in the way I sort of perceive it. So here's sort of my quick answer about when someone asks me what open source means. It's basically to say, you know, it's the old guild concept. It's the old commons concept. So what you have is you have a community of developers with a common mission, perhaps. And in doing so, they also share amongst them this body, or this commons, as it were, of code, of program code, that in some ways is intended to help satisfy that mission. And so what they try to do then is create wealth or add value, as it were, to this commons, or from the commons for themselves, and in doing so enrich the commons. You know, so it becomes really a living thing that grows, once again, either with the purpose of what it covers or the technology or whatever. Here's one quote. That open source works by everyone contributing what they want to contribute without compulsion, without feeling any sort of pressure, and then using what they want to use without any sort of restriction. And so this is what I said that Simon Phipps, who's his son, who's the open source evangelist at Sun, has referred to this as connected capitalism, and thinks about open source as being this old concept of the craft guilds that you had in the Middle Ages as being rediscovered. This whole idea of cooperation and collaboration is being rediscovered. So here's what can be referred to as the open source ecosystem that sort of explains in some way what I had on those previous bullets, where you have this common repository of source code, and what you have in this particular case, you know, a number of developers that are drawing from this commons and doing some kind of deployment. Now we'll talk about what that means in just a second. So deployment can mean not only adding to it but enriching it, or even in some instances, you know, creating their own, say, commercial venture with it. So that's why deployment's a little bit of an interesting word here. But the other thing that you see then is after the deployment, they're once again enriching or contributing back to this common repository. Okay? And so here perhaps is, you know, a more complete description I had on that previous slide. And so what we have still is this source commons, and we have a contribution that some developer might make to this commons. And then we have a developer community which is basically operating bidirectionally with respect to this source of commons. And they are adding to it, enriching it, creating software that works. And in the midst, what you have of this whole thing is a combination of contributions to this source, the use of the source, derived works that these developers may have from this source, and most importantly, innovation is the growth and maturity of the source that's in that commons. Okay? Makes sense. All right. So, one confusing question that people might have with respect to open source is, what is some of the software, you know, methods that we're used to or distribution channels that we're used to that are perhaps similar but not really the same thing as open source? And we're going to sort of try to explore why in that case. When we talk about open source software, we're not talking about public domain software. Because basically, when someone says, I'm creating public domain software, where they're surrendering the copyright for it, right? And then, as a result, other people who might do that can use that work in any way that they see fit. Okay? That's my interpretation of what public domain means. On the other hand, when you have something like freeware, you can say that the developer of that software might, in fact, have a license associated with that source. But what they probably do not do is give you access to the source code, nor do they give you the right to have that source take that source code and use that source code for other derivative works. Right? So that, I believe, then is the distinction between what we mean by free software and public domain software and what we're going to be the way we're going to be using the term of open source software. All right? And it's easy, I think, even in some instances historically that I'll mention, you know, to confuse these three areas. Okay, so here's my long answer to sort of build upon those previous slides. My long answer about what is open source is that it involves free redistribution of the code. Okay, it's really a combination, I think, of these other ones. So you have free redistribution of the code. You do, in fact, have access to the source code. You have rights on the derivative works from those codes. There's the issue of the integrity of the author's source code. There's no discrimination either against groups or against people who want to use the code. There is a distribution of a license. We'll talk about that again, associated with respect to the code. The license must not be specific to a product. This perhaps is why maybe our friends in Redmond are a little bit worried by some of the issues with open source. The license must not restrict other software and must be technology neutral. That is certainly perhaps one reason why our friends in Redmond are concerned about open source. So this is my long answer. Now, of course, I'm going to have some examples in this talk, which hopefully elaborate on each one of these particular points. So, obviously, when you talk about open source, you know, what does it mean when you say open source? What really is the way in which that source code is handled? Well, we're still going to say that it's open, it's controlled by a license. We'll talk about those. It's open to anybody. And it also has some compatibility with the guidelines of the Open Source Initiative, the OSI. So really, that's how I talk about that. When we talk about derived works, in this particular case, we are talking about derived works that can be associated with some kind of business model. This is where, in fact, a individual has the right to take this source code and derive from it a proprietary system. That derived work is affected by license, and it is affected by governance, the way in which it's controlled. We'll talk more about that. The same thing as far as contribution, the way people contribute to this common body, as it were, of code. That, too, is controlled by governance, license. It is gated by the people that are actually contributing to it. And a lot of the reason people contribute to or participate in open source projects is because of self-interest, right? Because they have a particular interest in what the goals of the project are, even though more and more we're seeing situations where organizations are, in fact, employing people to participate in open source projects. And there's this concept of meritocracy, which Aaron, of course, will appreciate me bringing that up, that exists in open source projects. And basically, meritocracy means this is not a democracy in these open source projects. You know, the idea of meritocracy basically says, you know, your rank is dependent upon your contribution, right? You, in fact, as it were, gain status within the organization by means of the contributions that you make. All right? It's not truly democracy, because it basically then is putting the power into the hands of the people who are most familiar with and most or closest, as it were, to the project. Okay? Now, how does this whole concept, fit into business plans or the whole software market? This is invariably a question that we have. And this is, once again, some points that come from Simon Phipps. And he basically sees at this particular point an evolution of the software market and really tries to define where open source falls into it. And he has what he calls software market 1.0. And this is certainly those situations where you bought a system, it came with software, and you paid for the software when you got the hardware. Okay? Those are the old days. Some of you in here may not remember mainframes. Hope I'm not showing my age. Okay? Now, when you get to software market 2.0, it basically then allowed you in some ways to select the system that you wanted and select the software separately with respect to that system. And typically what you did in that case is that you paid for software at the time of acquisition. So it didn't come bundled with the hardware system. Okay? That too is a familiar model, but there's the key word in this case, pay. Now in software model 3.0, you select software and features and put them together, but you pay for the software at time of value. Okay? That doesn't necessarily mean you pay for software in the same way in which you paid for it in market 2.0. Once again, you're paying for it by means, perhaps, of contribution. You're paying for it in other, perhaps, intangible ways. So obviously, when we talk about software market 3.0, that's really going to be the environment in which we expect to see major participation of open source software. Okay? Now, one thing when we talk about either participation or the use of open source, there's no guarantee, complete guarantee of freedom. What does this mean? This basically says that open source is only about the freedom to develop. Okay? The freedom of the end user is not an inevitable consequence of open source. Why does that mean that? What do I mean by that? You're going to see in another slide that, you know, when you're, one of the goals of perhaps an open source project is not necessarily to address the complaints of end users. You know, come to the project and say, I want this, I want this, I want this. That doesn't mean that the end users have freedom to do that. They do have the freedom to participate, and make contributions about various features that they want. So all this freedom for all really depends or includes these particular points: open standards, portability, transparency and inclusiveness, interoperability, open licensing, and open source. Now, these bullets right here are really what attracted me to this concept, because I personally want to see all of these particular bullets applied to the development and the evolution of web technology. Okay? Where obviously open source is not specifically tied to the development of web technology, but I think that all of you can see these are important issues for dealing with the evolution of the web. These are directions in which the web is going: dependency on open standards, interoperability between devices. Okay? And so consequently, that's why I see a strong tie between the evolution of the web and what's happening with respect to open source. Now, I want to quickly mention in this these licenses. They're still talking about this concept of license. And that sometimes frightens people when you talk about the overall issue of open source. What you really like to think about in this case is that you've got three classes of licensing. The first of these classes is the license that really allows you to create a market. So this is an unrestricted license. It basically says the license to create any work, and there's no restrictions as far as licensing. So it's a license class that has no restrictions on licensing. It's a little odd. On the other hand, this is creating a market. Now, a different, and it's unrestricted. A next class of licensing that we can talk about is community protecting. All right? Community protecting is very file-based, right? So in this particular case, we are, in fact, thinking about literally the tangible code that might exist in the commons. So it's saying that files that are derived from this common corpus must use this license, and any files added may use any license. They don't have to use Class B licensing. But this is the way in which you protect that community commons of code. Class C licensing is competition restricting, and it's project based. So once again, this helps to, in fact, keep a focus of what's happening in an open source project by saying that all the files in the project must use this license if any of the files were defined from the commons associated with that license. Okay? Everybody with me? Now, actually, you can see, to tell you how even more confusing this issue might be, is if you go to opensource.org, you will see a long list of all the varying licenses that can be applied in open source projects. Okay? But here's an example of one, and I have a particular interest being from Stanford for Creative Commons. Okay? This is just an example. This is attribution, share, and share alike. So basically, this is defining the rules by which a developer can operate given this kind of license. So you are free to share, copy, distribute, and transmit the work. You are free to adapt the work, any sort of derivations. But you must attribute what you use. And it basically says that if you in fact create, and this is the old copy, you know, the old copy left, if in fact you derive from this, then in fact your derived works are going to be at a minimum under the same license. Right? So this is just an example of a license that might be utilized with respect to one of these projects. All right, so There's a mantra associated with open source, which basically says collaborate, compete, and contribute. Collaborate over what does not differentiate you from other projects. Compete, not with each other, but innovation over the source commons, and most of all, contribute. All right? So, there's another, this is from the Apache Foundation. I've got good Aaron here to defend me in this particular case. I think this is a very interesting two definition when you think about that mantra before about how you define an open source project. You know, by saying it's about transparency, consensus, non-affiliation, you're representing yourself when you participate in these, respect, and once again, that word is meritocracy. It is not about telling someone how stupid they are or criticizing their work. It's not making code decisions arbitrarily. And it's not about demanding that somebody else fix your bugs. You know, this is one interesting thing that you have about the adoption of open source by organizations. They figure, hey, this is going to be an easy way to have a bug-fixing mechanism. You know, for example, that maybe if you complain about something about the code to one of the major software vendors, like at Redmond or somewhere, you know, you're lucky if you're going to get a response to it before the next season, okay?
The next release.
I was going to say your lifetime, but I wasn't going to be that rude. But in the case, certainly, it's one perception of open source is the fact that, you know, there's always these developers that are sitting out there anxiously waiting to fix any sort of bug that you might have. You know, they don't have a life. They're out there anxiously waiting to hear somebody ask for a new feature or complain about something wrong, and they'll jump on it, and consequently, you'll have it back 48 hours after you complain or after you announce it. Okay? That's not really what open source is about either. Okay. Now, I have to say, going back into trying to, once again, keep the thread in some way attached to the web, I like to think of there's a number of projects that are sort of the open source poster children, you know, which basically, because of their popularity and their adoption, certainly could prove to somebody beyond any doubt that open source works. I mean, certainly when you look at Apache and Linux, how can anybody have any doubt? These are obviously two software applications that literally have changed the world. Most of the world's web servers run on Apache, and it's open source. Okay? Pretty soon, probably many of the world's desktops and laptops are going to be running under Linux. Who knows? Okay? So these are certainly good examples of the fact that open source is not some kind of arbitrary phenomenon. Now, you've also got, I like to think, Perl, Tickle, and Python as being good examples. And, of course, we could argue all day about MySQL, PHP, Ruby, Rails, and all those. But the point is that certainly all of these are open source projects, and, of course, I'm interested in them because they have applicability with respect to the web, that are unquestionably successes. Okay? Now, why am I interested in open source and web development? Well, the number one reason I have to say is because I'm a web person. You know, if any of you have been to any of the talks that I had, you know that typically I talk about web stuff. The second reason I say is that I believe that the evolution of the web has been in large part due by a combination of innovation and free. Now, not necessarily open source, right? Because the Mosaic browser, for example, from NCSA, they didn't give you the source for that, but it was free. You could download it. They would probably give you the source if you asked for it, okay? But the whole concept is that it did, in fact, enable the web to create a community. I also would contend, like on that previous slide, that open source web tools are among the most commonly used, right? Apache, of course, we mentioned. I'd say there's a very good possibility that many of you in here are Firefox users. Okay? Certainly, that's another good example of open source. LAMP, if you're not familiar with that term, that's Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. You know, which certainly provides the architecture for a large number of web servers, a very large number of web servers that are around now. I say here, why for open source? Everyone uses web apps. And the W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, which basically is designed to really make web standards or help define the standards and directions of the way in which the web is going to go, actually supports and utilizes open source projects. And I would also say in this, now this is a debatable thing. You all heard about Web 2.0, and I think one of my other talks was about Web 2.0, is that whatever your definition of Web 2.0 is, it always involves strong user involvement, community involvement. And certainly that's something that you don't see in open source projects. So in some ways, you are in fact talking about the same kind of participation in determining the direction in which the technology is going to go. Here once again, you know, is a more specific list of some open source web tools that are very popular. You know, for scripting, for doing both client-side and server-side scripting, that support Java. You know, while Java is not necessarily an open source project, there certainly is,
It will be soon.
That there are, in fact, a number of open source projects that support the use of Java. And then, of course, you've got end-to-end, which are basically then full-blown development systems. And I'm going to give another example of one of those in just a second, that are open source. Okay, now I use the term in the title, open source as a collaboration platform. You know, what do I mean by that? You know, I tried to come up with something that was just not so mysterious such that people would be intrigued to come, but certainly also something that perhaps had a meaning. So if you look up collaboration, it says working jointly on an activity or a project. Okay? Well, that's certainly what we're talking about in terms of both open source and, if you believe where the web is heading, Web 2.0 or something of that nature. It's about collaboration and community involvement. Now, what do I mean when I say platform in this particular case? Well, I define a platform, you know, for these purposes as two things. First off is saying, you know, it's an infrastructure that's going to make collaboration possible, you know, and I think that when we talk about, you know, those definition of open source, that in fact we are in reality defining a development platform. But we're also defining in some way, you know, a structure upon which something can be placed. That's what a platform is. Or from which something can be launched. You know, so I can stand on a platform and dive into a swimming pool. That's very unlikely. But that's sort of the concept, too, of what platform means. Something that really stands or represents a mechanism for launching. All right? Another important side with respect is the role of standards in open source. And this is obviously a very key thing, and I think this is certainly something, as I said, that not only affects the web, but certainly I think affects the way in which open source projects are defined and managed. What do standards do for open source? You know, it helps to focus open source projects, because we said we don't want affiliation, we don't want technology. And then it allows open source applications to compete with, as well as interoperate with, commercial software assuming that the commercial software adheres to the standards. This too, I think, is a very important consequence of the development of web technology. So what does open source do for standards? It provides implementations to test and prove out standards. That's actually one of the things that the W3C does. The W3C has a browser which you can download called Amaya, right? And the whole purpose of that browser is not for a production browser. You wouldn't use Amaya the same way you would use Firefox. But what you would use Amaya for is to test adherence to standards that are developed by the W3C. And then, of course, it helps to pressure others to use standards. If you're successful, then there's nothing that advertises like success. Okay? So, in this way, once again, you can see how having a community that adopts this concept of open source and standards, you know, is very important. Now, what I decided right now to do was to give an example of an open source project that had to do with the web, one that I think is a very good one, but also one that I think that there's a fairly good chance that some of you have never heard of. How many of you have ever heard of Drupal? Okay. Well, that was somewhat successful in this case. And Drupal, of course, is a very interesting open source project for this, and I'll explain why, and obviously it's one that has to do with the web. It's not on our poster child list yet, but bear in mind, too, that's no reflection of what they're doing. Now, the goal of the Drupal project is really to provide software that allows not just an individual, but a community, so it's already sounding very 2.0-ish, to organize a wide variety of content on a website. Right? And with that generalized definition, you know, it's been used for a lot of different applications, everything from portals to blogs to e-commerce sites to social networking sites. It has provided the framework for the establishment of those kinds of web applications. So it sounds like it's very powerful in that particular regard. Okay? And if we look at the mission statement, this is straight off the Drupal website, you know, where they basically say, building on open standards and open source technologies. Now, what does that mean when Drupal is saying this? Drupal is saying, not only are we an open source project, but all of the pieces of our project are also going to be open source. Okay? Right? And think about this, not only with respect to the licensing of it, but with respect to any sort of derivation of their work. Okay? That enhances the potential of the internet, etc., for communities and collaboration, and to allow the collaborative production of online information systems and communities such as social networking, blogs, wikis, and those kinds of applications. Okay? Now, Drupal has also stated, or has, a certain number of principles, and I think it's meaningful to sort of look at these in the concept of saying, how does this support, or how does this work inside of an open source project? Well, that's designed to be very modular and extensible, in the sense that what Drupal has is a very powerful small core or kernel that can readily be extended with customized modules. So this really gives you an idea of how people can easily get involved in the Drupal project because of functionality that they want to add to the Drupal code. Just in the same way you see with Firefox, Firefox makes available their APIs such that anyone who knows how can in fact create plugins for Firefox. Okay? that has a big emphasis on quality code. Now, I think this is extremely interesting because, once again, people have the perception that those people who contribute to open source projects are just hackers, you know. They might be participating in this because they're happening to be taking a class at PHP and they want to, you know, see how much they know or show how much they know. But the point here is that they really do, in this, have a firm commitment and vetting of code that's submitted to them. So you can participate, but don't let your ego stand in the way if they don't take your changes. They're standards-based. Okay, that's one of their principles. As I said earlier, they're low resource because they utilize existing open source projects. They're licensed under the GPL license. They're written in MySQL. In PHP. They utilize MySQL. A lot of emphasis on usability. A lot of emphasis on collaboration. And they actually have a subgroup in the project that is devoted towards security. So once again, addressing the issues that, well, open source projects may in fact be inherently insecure and consequently should not or could not be used in an environment that required some level of security. As I said, if you look in the case of this, there's a wide number of modules that have been incorporated in Drupal, which once again fetches mention. You know, everything from blogs to picture galleries and podcasting. Okay? Some of those things that once again you do not see, or if you think, for example, of the major applications that utilize picture galleries like Picasa Web, or Flickr, or Yahoo, or those things, are certainly affiliated with organizations, or corporations, or something of that nature. This is another statement from them about developing for Drupal, you know, which I think is extremely interesting. It's open source, and the idea here, they are basically stating what their goal is and how you can, in that particular case, participate in the Drupal project. This one, I think, is extremely interesting. This is from the site. So basically, if you are someone who's thinking about contributing, they offer you support in how to write acceptable code for them. So once again, they're establishing very strong guidelines which help to ensure a successful building, meeting of their particular goals. Okay, so in closing, I have a few thoughts about, you know, the role of open source in future of the web development. And I said before, I certainly believe that the future development of the web depends on the use of open standards and interoperability. You know, that's going to be the only way that we're going to be able to have the diversity of web content on the diversity of devices that we expect to see. I firmly believe that the web and web technology should remain as free as possible. You know, it has been in the past. Certainly open source is going to protect that particular desire for freedom. I believe that the future development of the web is going to be driven by community interest as well as business interests. Now, neither one of those entities is inconsistent with the role that open source might play. And so then I would contend in my closing thought that, you know, open source or open source projects are in fact then a viable model and a very realistic model for creating a distributed, interoperable, and sustainable web. You know, a web that we anticipate for even the models that you see for Web 2.0, web services, web apps, etc., all of them, I think, can be developed, sustained, maintained, and distributed as per the Hope Resource Project. So thank you very much.